Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more. With volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
If you're shopping while working, eating, or even listening to this podcast, then you know and love the thrill of a deal. But are you getting the deal and cash back? Rakuten shoppers do. They get the brands they love, savings, and cash back. And you can get it too. Start getting cash back at your favorite stores like Levi's, Plow & Hearth, Adidas, Sephora, and Neiman Marcus. Stack sales on top of cash back and feel what it's like to know you're maximizing the savings. And it's easy to use. And you get your cash back sent to you through PayPal or check. The idea is simple. Stores pay Rakuten for sending them shoppers, and Rakuten shares the money with you as cash back. Download the free Rakuten app or go to Rakuten.com to start saving today. It's the most rewarding way to shop. That's Rakuten. Rakuten.com.
Lowe's knows you've got a job to do, and we help get it done. With the MyLowe's Pro Rewards program, eligible members save more with volume discounts on qualifying orders through a quote of $2,000 or more. Join for free today. Lowe's, we help you save. Offer can't be combined with any other discount, contract, and or special pricing. Exclusions, more terms, and restrictions apply. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.
Your kids could get free or low-cost health coverage from Medicaid or CHIP. Even if you've applied before, they may be eligible now. Kids up to age 19 are covered for checkups, vaccines, dentist visits, hospital care, and more. And if they already have Medicaid or CHIP, remember to renew every year. Visit InsureKidsNow.gov or call 877-KIDS-NOW. Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Brian Koberger.
It was the moment that nobody saw coming, or at least not in the way it played out. After nearly three exhausting years of relentless courtroom battles, endless motions, and seemingly bottomless legal maneuvers by Brian Koberger's defense team, the sudden plea deal behind pretty much all of this blindsided everyone. Families who'd braced themselves for a trial, ready to look the man accused of brutally murdering their loved ones in the eye and demand answers, were instead given a PDF attachment on a Sunday night, essentially saying, hey, guess what? No trial. It's over. Call it jarring is an understatement. It's been perceived as outright insulting by many close to the victims. Today, we're diving deep with defense attorney and former prosecutor Eric Faddis, a man who knows the complexities of cases like these from both sides of the courtroom. Eric's insight is particularly valuable because he understands the calculations prosecutors make, what defense attorneys grapple with behind closed doors, and maybe most importantly, how the emotional landscape of victims' families often collides with the cold, bureaucratic machinery of the legal system. There's a lot we're going to unpack here, and I want to hear your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube. If you're not there already, search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi to find us there so you can comment. If you're on the podcast platforms, lovely. Thank you for being there. Please hit subscribe. Also, check out YouTube. So, why did the prosecution choose now, of all moments, mere weeks from trial, to accept this plea? If the option of taking the death penalty off the table was never going to be considered, why not do it months or even years ago? Saving families the prolonged anguish and taxpayers the colossal expense. Eric brings unique perspective to this question, having made similar calculations himself during his career. We're also going to tackle the emotional fallout, the families of Ethan, Kaylee, Maddie, and Zanna. They've been thrust through a harrowing emotional grinder, built up, let down, and in many cases, left feeling entirely ignored. Steve Gonzalez, Kaylee's father, went public with his outrage, igniting a firestorm by urging supporters to voice their anger directly to the judge. An act that, while understandable, drew surprising backlash from the bench itself. Eric will help us sort through the legal ethics and emotional nuances of that exchange, and perhaps most critically, we'll explore the statement from prosecutor Bill Thompson, a reveal that frankly felt underwhelming, considering the stakes. There were no surprises, no explosive new evidence, just a stripped-down recounting of details we already knew. Was this strategy oversight or an unfortunate byproduct of an inexperienced jurisdiction navigating uncharted waters? Let's get into it, starting with the big question. Eric, are you surprised that the plea was even extended at this point?
Pretty surprised that the plea was even extended at this point.
Yeah.
You know, look, usually in a death penalty case, it's prudent. If you're going to plead it out as a prosecutor, take death off the table, put the person in prison for the rest of their life, make that decision early on. So you're saving the victim's families all of this heartache and turmoil and trepidation about an upcoming trial. You're saving the government money if you do that. I was sort of surprised that it came down this close to trial. I'm just wondering sort of what motivated the prosecutor to do it now and not 2 years ago or something.
Well, and that's a big question. From what we understand is that the ask, hey, can we get a plea deal came from Koberger's team. They're the ones who came to the prosecutor and said, what do you got? You got anything? You want to offer us something? And they came back and they said, okay, we'll agree, take death off the table for this. I guess why? I mean, do we know if something like this was offered way back when, or why would we wait all of this time if we're going to ever extend that olive branch? Almost 3 years in, all of this hell, all of this money, if we're ever going to do it, why not try it back then?
Totally. And you know, you look at, if this had been a case where defense had been super successful in motions practice and excluded a bunch of experts and stuff, and, you know, the prosecution had a good case in the beginning and then towards trial, they're like, we got some problems. Now we got to plead it out. It's one thing, but that's not what happened here. The defense, though they made valiant efforts, did not really damage the prosecution's case during its entire pendency. And so, you know, if you're sitting pretty a few weeks before trial, your case is almost as strong as it was in the beginning. I just don't get extending it now. If as a prosecutor, you're going to be okay with this kind of plea offer, put the Band-Aid off, get it over and done with in the beginning, save everybody money and heartache and everything else. And they didn't do that.
Was this, a case where, really the prosecution never intended to offer them anything, but it just kind of came to the 11th hour. Ann Taylor's exhausted all of her options. I mean, she really has thrown every damn thing out there to see what could stick, and nothing really stuck. How do you think this went behind the scenes? Do you think this was a come to Jesus with Ann Taylor and Koberger, or do you think this was Koberger in his kind of weird calculated mode going, we've tried everything, let's do this? I mean, it's conjecture, but what do you think?
You know, I just don't think it could have been that the prosecution was gung-ho on seeking death the whole time, hadn't even considered whether they'd allow this kind of plea offer, and then, defense is asking for it, so now let's think about it. No, at the beginning of this trial, or the beginning of this case, rather, the prosecution absolutely had in mind, hey, do we take death off the table and secure convictions for these four victims and ensure that this person never touches free society again? You better believe they've been thinking about that for years. And so the timing of it, even if it did come at the behest of the defense, prosecution had to have been thinking about this and whether they would agree to it years ago. And if they had agreed to it now, I don't see why their position would have been different 2 years ago and why they didn't just try to resolve it at that point.
Yeah, it is baffling. The families obviously are the ones that are feeling this the worst. And it's a mixed bag. The majority, I would say, from who has spoken out are not happy with this. It's obviously not a majority vote. It's not a vote at all. In fact, very little say, is what we're learning in terms of their influence on the decision by the DA to accept this plea deal. Steve Gonsalves coming out very angry. Some of the others have come out and said, this is, you know, this is horrible. We've been treated horribly by the DA's office here. Just from a legal standpoint, how do these things normally get handled when it comes to something like this, where you have victims' families that should be considered in the decision? And it seems that, you know, it was a Sunday night PDF that was sent out going, read the attached.
Yeah, in terms of how these are usually handled, not like this. When I was a prosecutor, especially on a death case, if we're considering a plea offer, we got to get in front of that. And so what we and in Colorado and most jurisdictions have a victim's rights law like this. The victims are entitled to be informed of key proceedings and also to be informed of any plea offer and to give input on that plea offer. And the prosecutor has to consider that input, doesn't have to make the ultimate decision. But the prosecutor has to consider that. My understanding is that these victims were consulted very briefly days before, and that I think at least one of the victims' families said that they didn't feel they had been adequately informed at all. And so they're sort of left hanging with this, you know, new development in a case involving the death of their child. And they're kind of saying, hey, you didn't talk to us about this sufficiently and you didn't hear us out in terms of what we want. And I think that is absolutely a misstep by the prosecutor if that's how it happened.
What was your reaction when the first order of business during the hearing, the change of plea hearing, was Judge Hippler scolding Steve Gonsalves without basically saying his name? Steve had gone on with Brian Enten on News Nation the previous night, had encouraged people to call the office, to call the judge's office. I mean, it wasn't like go to his house with picket signs. It was call, let your voice be heard. And then the judge's response was, I have not and will not listen. In fact, he's sending him to the authorities should anyone need to listen to the calls. I don't think the intent was go threaten the judge. It was just, we're not happy. And if you're not going to listen to us, I'm going to basically empower all of these thousands of people who are watching and passionate about this as well to be heard. And you're still sitting there going, la, 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 we're going to do it the way we want. I it seemed rather tone deaf, but I mean, I'm just a lay person. What was your thoughts?
I think tone deaf and also a little whiny. Hey, look, you're presiding over a nationally publicized quadruple homicide case, and there's a massive decision coming up that has been polarizing to the public, to that specific community, the public more generally. Look, you're going to get people who have thoughts about that, and deal with it, bro. Like, it's not it's something you need to be complaining about and starting the plea hearing off in a way that sort of implies that one of the victim's fathers did something improper when I don't think they did at all. I thought that was a weird way to start it and just not really becoming of a jurist.
No, I mean, I've appreciated his little more directness in this, where he's not taking a lot of crap and going for everything Ann Koberger asks for. And that's, I think that's been good. But that was a big turnoff of that, that moment there in the courtroom. It seemed rather, odd. Were you surprised at all by what was revealed in the statement that Bill Thompson gave? I mean, essentially, I've been kind of summarizing it as a mini version of what the opening statements would have been, of what he gave the other day. He laid out what the evidence was. It really wasn't any more than what we already knew about. I mean, or would there have been more things up his sleeve that he just wasn't saying? Because there was nothing shocking there. I mean, it was pretty much everything that we knew about, and less, I think, than what we thought we knew about, even. There was no evidence of contact, according to Bill, of Koberger with the people in that residence. I think we were all thinking there's going to be some sort of a something. Nothing. Nothing. Were you surprised by any of that?
I was surprised. Yes, I was surprised by the way it was presented and the content of that presentation. So when there's a plea that's going to happen like this, usually the prosecutor lays out either an offer of proof or a factual basis. They're synonymous to say, hey, here are the facts that would be presented that justify a person pleading guilty to a crime because, like, hey, we could back it up and they're going to be convicted. But yeah, it was rather limited. It was, you know, no bombshells that we haven't heard about. And I wonder if, you know, the victim's families were kind of hoping for something a little bit more gung-ho, a little bit more impassioned and incriminating for Brian Koberger. But this was the way the prosecutor chose to do it. And I'll note that, you know, this is kind of a smaller jurisdiction and they're not used to handling huge murder cases and having, you know, four victims' families listening to every word they say. So perhaps that affected what that record was like.
Coming out of this conversation with Eric, it's hard not to feel like we're all still searching for answers that the legal system just isn't set up to provide. We started this discussion wondering why the prosecution decided to agree to Brian Koberger's plea deal now of all times and not 2 years earlier. The fact is, Eric pointed out how puzzling this decision truly is, especially since the prosecution's case remained rock solid throughout the process. This wasn't a last-minute move driven by some unexpected setback. This was deliberate. This was strategic. The strategy itself remains mystifying, leaving families hurt, confused, and angry. Eric's insights into the prosecutorial mindset shed valuable light on why a deal like this might usually occur early on to spare victims' families and conserve public resources. But clearly, in this case, that standard practice was tossed out the window. Now we're left asking, was this justice or was it convenience? Did the DA's office prioritize expediency or avoidance of embarrassment over emotional and psychological well-being of the grieving families? The process seems to have done very little to honor the family's trauma or dignity. Another takeaway is the alarming way victims' families were treated, almost as an afterthought. Sending out critical updates via Sunday night PDFs hardly screams empathy or professionalism. And the judge's reaction to Steve Gonzalez's passionate plea for public engagement, perceived as tone-deaf and oddly defensive, raises even deeper questions. Who is the system really serving when families' pain is brushed aside so callously? And what about the evidence, or rather the lack thereof, in Thompson's courtroom statement? Here was the prosecution's moment to lay it all out, to justify their decision and validate 3 years of intense scrutiny and emotional torment. Yet, what we got felt sterile and frankly disappointing. Eric suggested that perhaps smaller jurisdictions aren't equipped for the emotional weight and high-profile nature of cases like these. But if that's true, does it excuse them or simply expose a flaw in our system? Ultimately, today's conversation makes clear there are no easy answers, just lingering, painful questions. Brian Koberger will spend the rest of his life behind bars, yes. But does the path that got us here truly represent justice? Or did the prosecutors, the defense, and even the judge stumble through a messy compromise, one that left emotional scars, confusion, and distrust in its wake? You tell me in the comment section what your thoughts are on this conversation on YouTube. If you're not there already, search Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi so you don't miss it. If you're on the podcast platforms, hit subscribe there so you don't miss any of our coverage on this case and the many that we cover for you here at True Crime Today and the Hidden Killers podcast. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being with us. We will talk again real soon.
If true crime is your obsession, we've got you covered. Press subscribe now to the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today for nonstop coverage, expert insights, and in-depth analysis.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why, like you, he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Remember those endless summer days that felt like they just last forever? Sun rays kiss your skin, grass tickles your toes as you bite into the creamy popsicle melting in your hand. Pure, unbothered bliss. Capture more sun-drenched memories with the Orange Vanilla Dream Hydration Multiplier from Liquid IV. This nostalgic vanilla flavor with notes of candied orange can help keep you hydrated while savoring your favorite golden hour moments. No matter how hot your summer gets, just one stick of Liquid IV and 16 ounces of water hydrates you better than water alone. It's three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, with 8 vitamins and nutrients for refreshing on-the-go hydration. Live your summer dream with Liquid IV. Tear, pour, live more. Go to liquidiv.com and get 20% off your first order with code INDULGE20 at checkout. That's code INDULGE20 at liquidiv.com.